You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody. Chris Webster here, co-founder of the Archaeology Podcast Network. And as the APN takes a break this winter, we'd like to bring you episodes of other podcasts you may not be aware of. Now, your host of this podcast, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, is also a co-host of the CRM Archaeology Podcast. And we have one of those episodes for you here today. On this episode, they discuss working as a CRM archaeologist when you're sick. How do you deal with it? Because sometimes you just can't take sick days, or you don't get sick days because of the type of employee you are. So they talk about mitigating illness and things like that while you're sick working as a professional archaeologist. So enjoy this episode and find the CRM Arc podcast anywhere you find podcasts or at arcpodnet.com. On to the show.
This is the CRM Archaeology Podcast. It's the show where we pull back the veil of cultural resources management archaeology and discuss the issues that everyone is concerned about. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to CRM Archaeology Podcast 313. This is your host, Heather McDaniel McDevitt. And my co-host is Andrew Kinkella in Southern California.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
And we are, if you can hear it in my voice.
Oh, I can hear it.
This is my Kathleen Turner stage of my life.
Totally, the sexy,
raspy voice.
It does.
with the occasional phlegm hacking. Lovely. I am battling this 2-week cough. Doctor can't tell me what it is. Laryngitis back and forth. This is me sounding good, Andrew. This past week, yeah. I can hardly talk. And I'm very rarely sick. So we thought.
That's true. Right.
I am very rarely sick. I'm a baby. I'm not a baby. I keep working. And that's probably also part of my problem, but I keep working through it. But it just is very frustrating. So we thought, but today, Andrew had a good idea. Let's talk about preventative illness, or preventative health, excuse me.
Preventative health. Yes. How does this come to me? I'm just such a genius. How does the idea, when you're talking to somebody who sounds like crap, and then you're like, wait, I know. I give myself full credit on this. Yeah. I was thinking, I'm like, yeah, preventative health, man, because there's a lot of stuff that we can do. And I do a bunch of little things over the years to prep myself for going to the field. Or if I know a big job's coming up somewhere or something, I'm like, okay, note to self, do this in order to keep my body up to what's about to befall it. So I thought we could just go back and forth today about stuff that either of us do to ease the load on our bodies as we go out to the field, preventative things we do, just that stuff we've learned. There's certain things, as we go through this, you'll see that there's certain things that I would rank almost as old wives' tales or silly stories, but I'm like, hey, these just seem to work for me, where others that are also old wives' tales and silly stories where I'll be like, no, I tried, this didn't work at all. But I thought we could just go through this stuff.
And then I think also we'll talk about near the end, just because my Andrew and I are around the same age. He's much
97.
Better. Yes. He's, yeah. And I sound 97 right now. He's much better about preventative care than I am. I have insurance. Yes. I have good insurance. But I'm the person who's like really averse to going to the doctor. I don't like going to the doctor for various different reasons. So I thought maybe we'll talk about that a little bit. And also, what are those things that really, you know, I think as archaeologists, we do tend to ignore our bodies just because in order to get through these labor intensive days, we've trained ourselves over time to ignore signs, and it actually becomes, I think, a way of living that people do not realize that could be dangerous. And for somebody who, when I was growing up, was a competitive athlete, that's another way that people, they train their bodies to ignore signs. And when you get older, it's not a good thing. So just talking about what are some things that really, you know, that everybody should be making sure that they are doing to take care of themselves. And so let's get to it.
Yeah. And I do want to scare people. I want to scare everyone straight into doing this, because it's funny, at our age, it's like you start to older generations of archaeologists. And I know several of them who have died in the last couple of years. Yes. And quite a few of them died not that old. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and in really poor health when they died. So don't be them. And I can just, I think we could start small. I can start with take some vitamins. Like, I do find that taking just a multivitamin over time can, like, just help your general health. It's not magic. And with a lot of this stuff I'll talk about in terms of taking stuff, it takes a while. Like, you have to take it for a month or 6 weeks before you even notice. So don't take this stuff for a week and be like, screw it, I don't notice anything. I find with multivitamins, and I don't know how true or not this is, but I find the ones that are a little bit more expensive, that are a bit better quality, tend to be a bit better. And it all goes down to, you know, how your body uptakes the various vitamins and this kind of thing. It gets very deep down into the well. And who knows how much of this is pseudoscience or not. But the basics of having vitamins in your body is a good thing. So I would, in my experience, I would recommend taking a basic multivitamin.
And I think on the other side of that, there are people that I see that they've gotten this cocktail that for them works for them in the morning. So they have an energy drink, they have coffee, they'll have ibuprofen, like they have, there's this like cocktail. I think my mom, when I was young, she was very health food nut. And so she would give us different types of vitamins and oils and tinctures, and we would take them. And I'm telling you, I'm very rarely sick now, but I was never sick when I was growing up. And my mom, a lot of it was, she had a study of, she worked hard to understand vitamins and how they got assimilated into your body. And I know that there were certain, you can see like on milk, it'll say it has vitamin D, or it says you take vitamin E. And I'm not going to say I know all this, but I do know that there's combinations of vitamins that you should be taking together in order for your body to actually be able to benefit from what you're taking. Doing a little homework on your end to make sure that the vitamins that you're taking are actually going to be effective is great. And then also remember that most doctors are there to take care of the issues when you have the issues, not to prevent you from having issues, unfortunately. And so we have to be responsible for our own health and reading up on what we need to take to be as healthy as we can. Because you're asking a lot of your body as an archaeologist. You're athletes, not athletes in sports, but your bodies, you're asking a lot of it.
Yeah. And then in order to start your journey to like the preventative health stuff too, if you can swing it, you guys, I highly recommend getting a blood panel of some kind, like the big blood panel, like the one where they take like 15 vials of blood. Like I think last time they did it, they took 13 or something out of me.
Yeah.
This of course depends on like health insurance, all this kind of stuff. But if you can swing it, of all the sort of doctorly stuff I've done over the years, the blood panel was really worth it to me, because then everything's busted out in a very scientific manner. And you just see what your body has, what your body doesn't have. And it just goes all down the list. And like for myself personally, I found out two things, mostly that I was very healthy, which is great. But like the two things that I was really bad on is, first, I have high cholesterol. And I have to deal with that. And so I take cholesterol reducing medication so I don't have a heart attack and die. So that's good. And then the second thing I noticed was I was super low in vitamin D, and it was like so low. It was like your body just doesn't make it. And I know here that you'd say something like, oh, well, just go in the sun more or just eat more spinach. And diet obviously has a part in this, but if your body is as messed up as mine is when it comes to something like vitamin D, you need to take supplements. Like and I'm not saying stay in a dark cave and don't eat any spinach, but I am saying like you need to, you'll notice. And that of all the sort of supplements or vitamins I noticed after taking a lot of vitamin D for a while, that I was less tired and it just seemed like my body was working a little better. So I can't recommend the sort of big blood panel thing enough, just to give yourself a base of operations where you're like, okay, this is where I need to go from to make myself better.
Yeah. And those blood panels are great because they're all encompassing and you'll learn so much about yourself from it. Mm-hmm. It tells you, it's just like you said, it tells you like better diet. And so from mm-hmm. there, it's a platform that the doctor can write up a whole slew of suggestions for how to be healthier. Where if you just go to the doctor and you're just doing a regular physical, there's not a whole lot that they can grab onto to figure out how to give you guidance and being healthy. I think that's an excellent suggestion. And it is something that you should be able to do once a year as part of your physical, but you probably have to ask for it. Insurance companies, unfortunately, are always encouraging doctors to not do certain things. And so sometimes you have to advocate for yourself to make sure that you're getting the most out of the physical that you can get.
Mm-hmm. And I was like you, I wasn't a huge go to the doctor kind of person. Like when I was younger, I probably didn't go to the doctor for a decade. I was one of those guys. That was a bad call. And I just really recommend everyone do this. Oh, and as a funny aside with the whole blood panel thing, I'm scared of needles, right? I know it's an irrational fear. I know it's like stupid. It's very embarrassing for me. But so whenever I go in, I tell like the nurse who's going to take the blood, I'm like, look, I'm going to react like a 6-year-old girl. It's just know this. Right. And so I had to sit there, Mr. Afraid of Needles, and get like 13 vials drawn. And so I was I had to man up. But my point is, if I can do it, you can do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think let's go on to the next segment. We'll be right back.
Let's.
Welcome back to CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 313. We're talking about preventative health because Heather sounds terrible right now.
Yeah. We're doing this too late for you, Heather. I'm sorry. So this is for others. You're giving
That's
to
right.
others.
That's right. I'm the case study of what not to do. So let's talk a little bit about supplements and things that we can take that are preventative on our side.
Yeah. So I've gone down the rabbit hole of supplements to a degree. I'm not like insanely like knowledgeable and I've tried everything and I'm just a convert to supplements. I will say that in my experience, and I'm just very honest about it, that I find that some of them do seem to work some and some of them seem to not do anything. Right. Yeah. And in all cases, these are not going to be magical elixirs that change your life. But I will also say, not only are they not magical elixirs, you have to take them for a while. You have to take them for a month or 6 weeks before you start to notice a difference. And you might be like, yeah, Kinkella, that's just because you've brainwashed yourself in 6 weeks to think that something's happening. But I do, in my honesty, I do think some of these work to a degree. And in no particular order, here's a handful of things that I have found for myself work. First, any of those extreme vitamin C packets, right? We can talk emergency. My favorite one is the one that's always sold as developed by a grade school teacher. You know, that one, it comes in a little plastic tube, and inside a little plastic tube, there are those huge vitamin C. They're not pills. They're these huge, what would you call them?
Like a powder.
Yeah. They're like but the tubes themselves aren't powder. It looks like a huge pill made out of vitamin C powder. And what
and
you do
it
is
dissolves.
What you do is you put it in water and you dissolve. I find it's much easier to take with ice. If you can put some ice water in there and put it at the bottom, it dissolves and then you drink it. I will say, as soon as you find that you're getting a cold, or as soon as a cold comes on, or even when you just, you know how we all have that inkling before it happens? You have that first thought of, am I
That's
sick or not?
You get it.
Yeah, it's right then. And you almost have to train yourself to listen to that. And do it like immediately. Just be like, wait, am I getting sick? No matter what. It's like taking some extra vitamin C isn't going to hurt you either way. So just do it. So I have found that taking that does take the edge off. And the other one to take it basically at the same time is one called UMKA. I believe it's spelled UMKA. It might be UMCA, but I'm pretty sure it's UMKA. This is available at your kind of local health store. You can't find it at Vaughn's or Albertsons or anything like that, but at most health stores will carry this, and it's not super expensive. It comes in a little like tincture, a little glass vial almost. And I want to say it's $15 or something like that. It's not insane. And you just, there's a little dropper in it and you just take out some of the liquid. It's like this dark brown liquid. You just suck it up into the little vial and you put it in a little tiny bit of water and you drink it. And I do have to say the Umka stuff does take the edge off of this sort of common cold system symptoms, that kind of thing. You take it fast. I've had real success with that. I wouldn't say if I didn't. The other thing that I would say I think has helped me some are supplements in that focus on joint health. Now, we as archaeologists all have to deal with the sort of joint situation, right? My knees are not what they once were. And what I find is we all have the one knee. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's usually the left. And after walking for a while or running, like I like jogging and stuff, it'll start to hurt. It'll start to grind because all the padding in there is getting old and crappy and torn up. That's not what it once was. The joint supplements, if you take them for a while, if you look this up, you guys, some of them have like hyaluronic acid in it. There's different ones, but I think they take the edge off. It's not a miracle cure, but it's better than without. So that joint supplement world of stuff is something that I can vaguely recommend. I've had good, what I would call success with it.
Yeah, I think the other thing is that there's a whole other topic about the alcohol and drinking in the field and everything. And it's a social thing. And hey, like I like my beer and wine like anyone else and cocktails.
And you drink my rum and cokes like anyone else. Okay. Yeah. I don't have a problem.
It definitely affects your joints and you have inflammation in your joints. And so just remembering that, I think when you know you're going to be asking a lot of your body, drinking probably isn't the best thing to be doing the night before a large survey or you're having to do a lot of STPs or whatever. When you're asking a lot of your body, having alcohol in your system is not a good thing. And not to be a Debbie Downer, it just is, you're not setting yourself up for optimum performance. And the older you get, the harder it is.
Yeah. I'm sorry to break in, but just the dehydration aspect of it, it really affects you. In terms of, this is almost a funny backwards preventative health measure, but in terms of dehydration, one thing I do, especially before a day where it's going to be a lot of surveyor in the field, is I drink a ton of water very early, like before we leave, like to almost to pain, because what I'm doing is I'm using my body as a canteen. And I learned that trick in Belize, and because all the Belizean guys did it and stuff, and it totally works. You know? So it's like, I can't recommend that one highly enough if you're on a day where there's a lot of survey.
And I'll say, do not, I know for some of us women, it is a pain in the neck to have to go to the bathroom in the field. And so in the beginning, when I first started doing archaeology, I would just not drink as much. Mm-hmm. I drink enough that I knew, okay, today's a hot day. I should drink this much. I'll drink enough that I'll be sweating it out, but I won't have to go to the bathroom. Not a good formula for, you know, the best outcome. That's for sure. Yeah. You just have to kind of suck it up. You're going to have to go out in the field. It is what it is. Don't do that because you know what I would end up with? Terrible headaches.
Oh, yeah.
And they're the worst.
That's when you know. You're like, oh, I need to drink more water.
Yeah. That's when you have terrible headaches in the sun. Also, the other thing is for those that maybe are newer to the field work, different bodies have different lines of success. So I'm a very fair skinned person. I am a lot more susceptible to sun than other people. So when I'm out there, I definitely have to cover up a lot more. I think everybody should cover up, but for some people, people tend to heat up more than others. And those of us that are fair skinned, I've got freckles, I've got the red hair, I've got all nine yards, all the recipes for I should not be in the sun. And so you got to know your body and don't look at what other people do. You have to know your body enough to know what you need to do to prepare it for your day. So just to me, I think that's one of back to being an athlete when I was younger, I had to know my own body. There were different, we used to go and compete in areas with higher elevation. And the one thing that I learned was do not eat sugar before you do that, because it actually fights for the same oxygen in your blood that you're going to need when you're in these higher elevations. And so we would be very careful about the amount of sugar that we would consume. But some people, it affected them more than others. So you're going to have to really do some testing, experiment with what makes you feel really good in the field, and then find that formula and stick with it. And yeah. Sometimes as you get older, it may have to change. But for the most part, you really need to learn how to, you have to learn how to listen to your body.
Yep. I would just double and triple down on that. It's so true. And it's so funny how often we don't. Yeah. Something as simple as, am I getting sick? Whatever, dude. I don't know. Listen to that. Yeah.
And I think some people get nervous, or if I feel, let's say you're on a 10-day rotation or whatever. Sometimes I can sweat it out with the best of them. I'm not feeling well. I'm like, you know what? I just need to be out in the air. I'm just going to push through this and I'll feel better. And many times I do feel better. You do need to give your body some rest. So just remember that you don't want to be like, you have to know your body well enough. You have to be honest with yourself and honest with the crew chief. Sometimes you're going to get pushed back because you know what? It's a big pain in the neck when somebody's sick. But if they're a crew chief, they'll understand that. And if you've been honest along the way, and there are people out there that, listen, if you're honest about it and you're sick and you're truly sick, people aren't sick very often, right?
Yeah.
It's the people that are like, you know what? I don't feel like working today. I feel tired. There's a difference between tired and sick. So if you're being honest with the crew chief and you're absolutely sick, they'll have compassion.
I will say, as we were talking, one thing that Heather just brought up about sugar, that like, and it was just a bit of a toss off there, that for me personally, that's what's going to kill me is sugar. I'm a total sugaraholic. And that's something I really have to curb in my own life. You know, how stuff like soft drinks are so just ubiquitous everywhere. I would say that if you guys can curb your soft drink intake, it goes so far for preventative health. And this is coming from somebody who I basically can't stop drinking soft drinks, but I meter it out to myself. Even if it's something like buying the little tiny cans of Coke, I think they're like 8 ounces or something, versus the regular ones, the regular 12-ounce cans.
I love those.
The little ones. I like the little ones. Yeah. And the little ones are hard because it's a waste of money in a way, because the little ones are always more expensive. But I'm like, I buy only the little ones. And then when I'm good, I'll drink only one little one.
Yep.
And I think of it as dessert, not as part of a meal, because it's just it's pure poison. But I love Coca-Cola, but it's poisoning me to death. I'm poisoning myself to death slowly. And so that's that sugar intake thing is key and something to try. And that will go miles in terms of preventative health if you can control sugar intake.
I say we go take a break.
No, let's keep going. Yes. We'll see you guys in a minute.
Welcome back to CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 313. We're talking about preventative health. And I thought for this third segment, let's talk a little bit about what are some things that we should be doing just for, not just when you're getting sick, but we were talking about what do you do in the field, understanding your body. But there's some other things, like there's a lot of people that don't have the regular full-time insurance, because especially the as needed. I don't know what's required of people in different states, but I know you have to have some form of insurance, but it's pretty lousy. So let's talk about different options for how do you do the preventative medicine when you don't have full-time benefits?
Obviously, that's tough. I think before we get to that, I can talk about one or two other preventative things you do that just don't even deal with doctors. First, we just ended talking about health and like sugary drinks and stuff. There's something I do whenever I'm out in the field or out in a faraway place, and I call it basically a salad hunt. And Whereas I'm not a huge like vegetable person or salad person, but I know how important it is to eat well. So I'll actually like consciously think, today I need to go on a salad hunt. And that means finding a salad or finding some sort of healthy food. And it is a true hunt, as so many of us know. It's like when you're in the middle of some little town, the middle of nowhere, and all there is a McDonald's and a Wendy's, the salad hunt is a full-on expedition. But if you can hook that up, or even look beforehand, you know you're going to a certain place, like, where could I get some decently healthy food? And this is not meaning that you're some over-the-top health nut. It just means don't eat fast food all the time, and how can you break it up? So go on the salad hunt, because while sugar will kill you, spinach will save you. So that's something I've found has really worked for me. And let's be honest, when we eat better, you can feel it. You feel better. Another thing I've noticed before we get into sort of the more doctorly side is figure out how you walk and figure out how your feet hit the pavement. I may have talked about this at some point in the deep, dark past, but you want to figure out if you're a pronator or a supinator. And that just basically means how your foot hits the ground as you walk. How you do this is you can wet your feet on concrete and then walk a little. And basically, if you have a really high arches or not, that can start to tell you how you walk, how your foot hits the pavement. Why do you want to know that? Because that's going to transfer up to your knees and your joints and stuff. And of course, as archaeologists, we're walking all the time. There's so much of that. So you want to go on some like running websites or just read into running shoes. Do you need more of a like a cushioned situation, or do you need more of a stabilizing shoe? I personally, I'm weird. I'm the supinator. I have very high arches is really what that means. So I ultimately need a shoe that's very cushiony, and I don't want the stability shoe. Basically, my foot needs to move around a little bit. Yeah. And I'm not saying you need to go, you're about ready to do a 100-yard dash. This is going to translate into your boots. So it's not about buying super, super expensive boots, although as archaeologists, we should buy decent boots, but they've got to be the right kind of boots for your kind of walking.
So and true.
I've seen it, like I didn't used to know this stuff. And about 10 years ago, I got into it and it made such a difference. And also if you beyond this do any kind of exercising regime, whether it's walking, whether it's jogging, whether it's doing jumping jacks, you need the right kind of shoes. And so I just know for myself, I know that like the Brooks Ghost works for me in terms of running shoes, but that translates into the, again, the hiking boot world as well. So that's a bit of preventative health, just your footwear and how you treat your feet. Big deal.
Yeah. Long term, I have high arches too. And because of that, sometimes if I'm not wearing the right kind of shoe, my toes ache.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And that's like the worst. If your feet are not feeling good on a survey, it's like, it's the worst. You're not focusing on what you need to be focusing on.
Yep.
So I absolutely, being able to get the right boot, and you may need to try, if you're new to archaeology, you need to try various different boots. I actually swear by, there's some boots, I don't get the most expensive boot.
Yeah, me neither.
I get exactly what you're saying, because actually people are like, oh, I get the most expensive boot, then it will last me longer. But then it is also breaking down. I think I'd rather do a mid-size good boot that I can get a new one every now and then.
Yeah, that's where I go.
Yeah. So I think the other thing as far as eating, when you're out in the field, for me personally, I was just talking about this yesterday. I perform better when I don't have a lot of sugar and I don't have a lot of carbohydrates. Some people, I've been this way since I was young. And when I was an athlete, I was a protein. I would eat a ton of protein. Another way, what I used to do is I used to do these potassium shots, and those would give me some energy because I wasn't a major carbohydrate person, but I would do the potassium shots along with a lot of protein. And everybody's different. So learning your body, I really think that this is something, actually people should be teaching this in college when you're doing work that's so asking a lot of your body. You need to learn how to maximize your effort by doing what's best for your specific body. And it's not the same for everyone.
They should teach it K through 12. Like 12th grade should be all about this stuff. I can't agree with you more. It's about listening to your body. It's funny. Notice that through this entire time, you and I, neither of us have preached, you need to do this one thing. It's here's just ideas. And we're talking about what worked for us personally. Like for me, I know that a lot of people swear by taking B12, like the vitamin B12. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, I take it. It's like almost an instant energy rush for them. Right. B12 does nothing for me.
Yeah, me either.
I wish it did, but it doesn't. Like I take it, I feel nothing. But in my case, vitamin D is huge. So it just depends on how your body processes stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I think like to finish off this episode, I'd like to talk a little bit about taking care of your body long term, especially those of us that have been in the field for many years. And again, I sound like a broken record, but And we say this on a lot on podcasts, really need to diversify your skill set and make sure that if you're somebody who just loves to be on the field, you don't want to be one of those desk people. I get it. That is one way is to diversify yourself by being useful in the lab, useful for writing sections. But if that's really not your thing, start finding areas where you can be very helpful and improving those skill sets. Such as recording sites, being a crew supervisor, being very well organized, learning photogrammetry, learning how to improve methods in the field and being the most efficient in the field and grabbing as much data as possible. Like, don't just sit back and say, okay, I'll just do what I'm told. As you get older, you're going to have to find ways to make yourself valuable if you want to stay in the field. You're not going to be 70 years old and able to keep up with 20-year-olds. I don't care if you've been doing this forever, your body eventually is not going to be able to do it. So you've got to find ways to diversify your skill set, even in the field. There's ways of doing it there too.
But also in order to make it that far, you need to be not dead. So I do want to recommend the colonoscopies and mammograms. I think I may have taken everyone through the joys of my colonoscopy a while ago, but I'm 53. Oh my God. Yes. I'm 50. I always have to do the math. And so I just did it like a year ago and I won't take everyone through that, but just to say it'd been weighing on my mind forever and I did it and everything was fine. And it's just do it.
Yeah. And so for those with as needed that maybe don't have access to the best, I think for me personally, with doctors, I just put it off. And I have all these messages in my head where I'm like, oh, I can't go there because of this or that. Just go and do it. There are regular mammograms. Like they have a push to get people to do mammograms. There's a lot of free services out there. Even though I think everybody has insurance to some degree, some of them are expensive. And the co-pays are expensive. But these preventative services, there's a lot, if you do a little digging, there are a lot of medical facilities that provide these preventative treatments free of charge. You just have to go out and look for it.
Oh, yeah. So I was just going to add to that. So yes. Like you have to do the work. You can't use that excuse of, oh, everything's just expensive. It's yes. I know that many things are expensive, but you can find things that are less expensive. In my experience, it tends to be people just don't use the resources available to them. And even as it has nothing to do with health insurance or no health insurance,
they're putting in their head. I do it. I'm saying this because I
know you're exhibit A of faking yourself out about this, but, and me too, up until the last 10 years or so I've come around, but I used to be like that too. I noticed this at the college where none of the students barely take advantage of like the student health center, just the student health center. You can get so much mileage out of that. And so few people do. It's there are health services right there for cheap. Yes. If you're a student, you have it made. Yes. Yeah. And you can get a lot out of something like student health and just use that stuff that's available to you. Get this stuff done.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't, man, there's so funny. I'll put myself out there for a long time. Like I wasn't feeling good about my body and my weight. I'd gained some weight and I didn't want to go to the doctor because I didn't want to get on the scale. Like I'm ignoring what could be potentially, I could have ailments or I'm not going to get a mammogram because I'm afraid to get on the scale. And
yeah,
at one point, somebody was just like, a friend of mine, Heather, this is ridiculous. Just yes. go to the doctor. And this is stupid. Like, you think the doctor hasn't seen people that are self-conscious about their weight? Of course they have. Yeah. And yeah. maybe you'll hear something you don't want to hear, but you can't put your head in the sand. And my mom used to do that. She used to, she'd rather not know than know. You know mm-hmm. what? Eventually you will know. And you know how yep. you're going to know? Because you're going to have a stroke, or you're going to have
you're coughing
something.
Up blood.
Right. Yeah. Like, eventually your body is going to force you to know. So you yep. might as well go and try to take care of it early on. And then the other thing is that it gives you some peace of mind. As your body gets older, your body starts feeling different. Mm-hmm. And then your imagination runs away with you, and you think, oh my goodness, could it be this? Could it be that? And then we do yeah. all these like armchair doctor thing where we Google, here's the symptoms. What do I have? And yep. it's looming over your head of what you could be having, all these terrible illnesses. Just if you go to the doctor, do a physical, do your preventative, then at least it gives you some peace of mind, right? That, mm-hmm. okay, you know what? Either you do have something and now you can tackle it and you can get yourself some care, or it isn't. So maybe it is your body just changing. And that yeah. gives you some peace of mind to know, okay, my body's changing. These ailments don't mean that I have some tumor in my back. It just means that I probably shouldn't have lifted something really heavy right. without bending at the knees. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think at this point, too, we know so many people who have died of these various ailments that maybe could have been prevented, or at least their life could have been longer had they made other choices. I think our theme here is don't die.
Do all you can to, yeah, not.
Yeah. Don't do that.
So, well, Andrew, I think this was good. Hopefully, if it helps one person, gives them the impetus to go and take care of themselves yeah. a little bit better, I think it's a good thing.
You know what? That one person might be me. Like just me. Talking about it, I'm like, man, too. I got to organize my stuff a little better. I got to get my pills together. It's, yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Pseudo Archaeology Podcast. Please like and subscribe wherever you like and subscribe. And if you have questions for me, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, feel free to reach out using the links below or go to my YouTube channel, Kinkella Teaches Archaeology. See you guys next time.
The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.